If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ready.
Hello and welcome to Tuesday Morning Football in association with Sports Travel Tours. And what a week 13 it was. We have a full slate of games to talk about for the first time since week 3. The most touchdowns in a Sunday all season. There were comebacks, there were tight games, there were blowouts. There was so much to talk about, Ollie. So let's get on with it. This is the Gridiron Show. All right, welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Sports Travel Tours. Will Gavin and Ollie Hunter in the studio with you today. Sorry, just a little fade up just for you, Ollie.
Cheeky. We're in a different studio, so you're in charge of that now.
Yeah, it's excellent. And what I'm trying to do, because in order to make it more efficient for me, so I'm trying to operate across two screens. So one, for audio and stuff, to make sure that we can get more classics like this.
I think it was BS.
Or...
You like that?
Or... do people realise I do that live every time, do you think?
I don't know. I don't think so.
It's got to be varying quality, let's be honest.
We'll have a load of play the music again.
Okay, hold on.
Kick watch! I can't do your falsetto, but we'll have a lot of kick watch today as well.
The most missed PATs on a day in NFL history. That's totally not...
Three in one game,
six in total. The first ever two-point PAT block return. In fact, there were two of them. One was brought back for a penalty.
Yeah.
So many kicks to talk about, Ollie. Aren't you excited?
Kick watch!
Excellent. So I'm trying to operate that with my left hand and the other with my right hand, which might mean that occasionally I'll intend to play something because Ollie is feeling morose about something. And instead, I will accidentally play...
That's what me and cry for win.
Oh, you should never, ever play that, ever. Oh, my God.
Like I said, this was a fantastic Sunday of football.
That's also like Ray Rice having a movie.
Oh. What?
No one wants that.
No.
I don't think that's happened, by the way. Don't go and search for it. If it has happened, search for it. Let us know.
But, yeah, there's just so much to get onto, Ollie, that we're going to have to rattle through today. There's 15 games to talk about. So we're going to have to do
something. Why is there 15?
Well, because we talked about a certain game on Thursday night already. You knew that, but you didn't. You just wanted me to say it. And I realised that 3 words into the same sentence and didn't know how to recover from it without you being all smug. So just be smug for a minute.
All right. It was wonderful. Hail Mary. Okay. By the way, I keep watching it back. I don't know whether...
Commentary as well, don't you?
That Brazilian commentary is incredible. But I don't know whether other Packers fans, and this will be the only time that we'll mention the Packers this show, I promise. But I don't know whether other Packers fans also keep watching it back. It might just be me. I don't know.
Excellent. Right. Is there anything, before we get on to the football talk, like, we're going to have to do something we've never really done before, which is be slightly restrained. If we want to try and get this into the around the hour mark with so much to talk about, we're going to have to stop ourselves and say, look, there's so much to talk about, we need to move on. So
I've got one very quick thing to say, I promise.
I know, well, look, we can ramble nonsense before we get onto the football. Ollie, what would you like to talk about?
Well,
you came in and you started to tell me something, and then you went, no, I'm going to save it.
Yeah, I've forgotten what it was. But I'm currently wearing... A black polo shirt. It's nice. It's a nice shirt.
I like the pink trim around the neck, around the collar.
It's
That's
more,
what the word is.
It's more orangey. Anyway.
Certainly looks pink from
I
here.
Keep forgetting that it retains body smell. Even when you wash it, it will then smell again if you wear it and you've had a bit of a hot day. So now I stink.
That's how clothes work, Ollie.
I know, but... other clothes don't retain. You know, they don't retain. But because it's like a polo shirt fabric... I now am very conscious that...
We're in a larger studio than usual, and on this occasion, we're separated. I can see you for once, which is lovely, because we're not sat in a line
like
we are in our ridiculous other studio, but I can't smell you, so best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds. I will be applying roll-on deodorant as I leave. Too much information. Anything you'd like to tell me, Will?
I went to the cinema today.
Oh, what did you see?
I saw two films.
Oh, I love two film cinema days. This after 5 films in one day with the Star Wars marathon.
Oh, yeah. On Saturday, I watched all 5 Star Wars films because Episode 1 doesn't count as a film. It's just a nonsense. I watched 5 Star Wars films on Saturday with my friends Ali and Adam and Laura. Ollie was meant to come.
Decided not to.
Then got drunk, then went on a date with something else.
I did not go on a date, but fair enough.
You told me you were going to go on a date.
Well, I didn't.
That was your excuse. I made burritos and everything. And I made burritos because I thought you were coming.
I love burritos.
Homemade amazing burritos. I found out that the place we're staying in San Francisco is right by where all the Mexican food is.
I don't even know where we're staying, but that's wonderful. Give me a high five for that.
Oh, yeah. That was terrible. This is a downside. I'm not doing it again because it'll just be another limp-wristed mess.
Okay.
I went to see Carol and the Krumpus. Very varying qualities of films.
Carol the one with Cate Blanchett?
With Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara, and it's wonderful.
Really?
It's not very manly football lads and blokes and that, and maybe I shouldn't have gone to see it on my own. But I said to Sarah, do you want to see it? Thinking she would, because it's a bit romantic and that. And she really didn't, so I went and saw it on my own, and it was glorious.
It just, I just can't be arsed with Cate Blanchett.
It was wonderful.
Blanchett.
She's phenomenal in it.
Really?
Like, okay. the amount she can communicate with just the slightest raise of an eyebrow or upturn of the corner of a mouth or something. It's just an acting masterclass.
Oscar?
I think Rooney Mara might win the Oscar. Or I think what they'll end up doing is getting one of them nominated for best, one of them nominated for best supporting or whatever.
And one of them will win it.
Yeah.
Okay, and what was the other one? The Krumpus?
The Krumpus, which
What's
was
that?
Dreadful, but quite fun at the same time. It's like a Christmas horror movie in the vein of the old, like, Gremlins and that sort of thing.
Oh, does it have What's-Her-Face from The Walking Dead?
From The Walking Dead?
Is it that movie?
No, I don't think so.
Well, there's a horror movie coming out with What's-Her-Face.
Oh, no, yeah, that looks terrible. Yeah,
the Korean guy.
No, that looks dreadful.
Okay.
No, it's not that. It's got Adam Scott in it, who's in Parks and Recreation and
various
other bits. And it's very silly and it's quite fun and quite violent and quite nasty. And, yeah, I enjoyed it.
All right, cool.
But not as good as the likes of Gremlin and that sort of thing.
Football, where do you want to start?
Well, it was such a good week. We've got in loads of tweets. We've got loads of games to get through, obviously. I want to do this in a slightly bizarre order, so I've set everything up. We're going to do Monday Night Football in a minute. Then we're going to do the 9 o'clock games, because they were so good.
Yes, they were.
Then we'll chat a bit of Sunday Night Football.
Okay.
Then we'll move on to the relevant early games.
Fine.
And then I have a section called Irrelevant But Fun Games. And then the Dolphins and Ravens all on its own.
Should we just... That's all we're going to talk about?
Matt Sharp has been picked pick six for the 5th consecutive game. That's all we're going to talk about.
And
Ryan Tannehill threw for 89 yards on 9 completions.
And can I just say, I predicted it. Jay Ajayi would get his first NFL score, and he did.
Yeah, you said touchdown, though. I'm sure you said
touchdown.
Score,
touchdown.
So I'm not sure 2 points counts.
Apples are apples.
That's all I'm going to say.
You know, apples are apples. That's all I'm going to say. That's the last time we'll mention it. Who would have thought that we'd have kicked off this bonanza of NFL action with the Ravens and Dolphins? Oh, we're a disgrace.
Tom tweeted us asking...
We're the NFC East.
Tom tweeted, let's do this as a tease to the games. Tom tweeted us asking, what was your favourite touchdown of the week?
Oh... Are we teasing? Are we doing it
now? Yeah, that was the point of this, was that you weren't just meant to make a noise at me, was that we were going to discuss it, but without breaking down the touchdown or the play or too much. I just want to know, what was your favourite touchdown this week?
Jenkins picking Brady.
Yeah, that was my number one as well. We discussed this beforehand,
okay,
without revealing it to each other. We both said we had a number one, and I bet it would be the same thing, and then we both had a number two as well.
What's your backup?
My backup is Doug Baldwin's 53-yard bomb from Russell Wilson, and I'll get into why that was such a good play when we talk about the Seahawks game.
My backup is Marcus Mariota.
Oh, what am I talking about? Of course my winner is Blaine Gabbert's 44-yard touchdown run.
That was my number three.
He is... I am full-on Gabbert-gasm. Oh, we'll get into all of that. So, literally the best touchdown of the week for me was the Russell Wilson one. My favourite touchdown was the Tom Brady pick six on the goal line, and we'll talk about that.
Sorry.
And
did
the most fun one was Blaine Gabbert.
Were we asked you're the best one?
Yeah, yes, I think so. But, I think the exact thing was best TD of the week.
Okay, fine. Just making sure.
There was one bit of big NFL news. Most of the NFL news we will link in with the other games. But Johnny Manziel will start next weekend for the Browns. After Austin Davis and the Browns tanked to a miserable 37-3 home loss to the Bengals, they have reopened the door and Johnny Manziel will come back and play this week against the San Francisco 49ers on the road.
Wow.
Devin Foxall tweeted us, for the good of football, can we please take the number one pick away from the Browns? I think everyone would be happy with the Browns sacrificing their number one overall pick, which is what they're definitely going to have at this point. And also, by the way, I was going to talk about this when we got to the 49ers game, but we had a bet that the 49ers wouldn't go over four wins this season. They're on four wins, and they face the Browns at home next week. You're going to owe me a beer.
Fair enough.
That's my claim, at least.
But it's just that the last week, and probably the week before as well, and that whole Manziel stuff, it's just going to be completely pointless.
Total nonsense. I mean, absolutely ridiculous.
It's just a joke.
I'm not suggesting he would have beaten the Bengals, because he definitely wouldn't have done. They were absolutely dominant yesterday. But he might have had a better chance of scoring more than 3 points.
Yeah.
Austin Davis, not an NFL starter.
Yeah, it's just a joke.
Right, tonight in Monday Night Football, there is a big NFC East matchup. Technically, the Cowboys are still in the division as we speak right now, thanks to events elsewhere. They face Washington tonight in Monday Night Football. Let's be honest, we're all hoping for a Washington win, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just so we can stop talking about the Cowboys, put them into the irrelevant but fun section, if not the not fun section. So should we just hear what I had to say about it?
Well, firstly, isn't it weird that we want a win for the racists over Greg Hardy?
Yeah, this is not a matchup of good human beings, but it's a matchup of football teams, and therefore I will talk about it, even if ever so briefly. So I said I thought I was going to be a little bit short on this game, and up until about 4 minutes left, I really thought I was going to be. Two teams exchanging field goals. It was 9 points apiece. It was messy. It was boring. Lots of punts, lots of penalties on punts, lots of decent defensive coverage. I mean, Sean Lee had a great day for the Cowboys. On the Washington side, you had plenty of guys on that front four who looked impressive. They were stopping the run. They were getting plenty of tackles. I thought Baker looked good. I thought Breland looked good in the backfield. Compton, Foster all seemed to have a good kind of team day on defense. And it was just a bit of an ugly game, and then came the fourth quarter. A wild finish capping an otherwise dull game filled with turnovers, punts and penalties. The Cowboys beat Washington 19-16 on Dan Bailey's 54-yard field goal with 9 seconds left. They combined scored 18 points in the first 58 and a half minutes, then 17 in the last 90 seconds. Dallas scored the game's first touchdown to lead 16-9 after recovering DeSean Jackson's fumble on a punt return, which, by the way, is not a fumble. I'm sorry, but he goes to ground and the ball forces the ball the ground forces the ball to come out. Therefore, it's not a fumble because he must be down by contact because it's the ground that forces the ball to come out. Absolutely ridiculous. However, because they ran it in so quickly and time management was so poor, McFadden ran out of bounds when he could have wasted 40 seconds off the clock or forced a timeout. And then when he did go for the first down, he pushed all the way through for a touchdown when, for me, he should have had instructions from the sideline to go to ground, eat up the two timeouts, and even if you're just kicking the field goal, you're only going to leave Washington with 22, 23 seconds left after you consider the length of plays, the time taken off, the timeouts, everything else, to go down and at least kick a tying field goal. But regardless, they got a big return off the next one. Then DeSean Jackson caught a 28-yard touchdown catch in the back corner. Great feat to get down and tied the game up again at 16 apiece, but still left enough time for the Cowboys to go. Matt Cassel drove them. They did well to get into field goal range. Then Dan Bailey nailed it from 54 yards. Still left a little bit of time at the end. Washington went for a little lateral move. It didn't work out for them, and the game ended 19-16. Not a classic by any stretch of the imagination. You're going to hear a lot of talk about how the Cowboys are still in it this week. Nothing about this game suggested to me that they're a good football team. Matt Cassel did not play very well at all. Darren McFadden struggled on the ground. This was not a great performance, but they won in a dirty, tight game, and that can sometimes be the difference. I still expect Green Bay to smash them at the weekend, and then maybe finally we can stop talking about it. From the Washington perspective, they're
must be gutted to miss out on a chance to move clear at the top of the division. The Giants-Eagles game last week of the season looks very interesting now after the Eagles' performance this weekend. And I'm sure there's plenty more of that for us to talk about on the show. So here's just a few nice little stats. First time the Cowboys won a game without a touchdown pass since 2012 was week 3 against the Buccaneers. The first time Monday Night Football history that 7 straight games were decided by one possession. The Washington special teams absolutely killed them. Yeah, all in all, difficult to watch, but the Cowboys will be pleased with the win. Let's go back and talk some good football. So that was Monday Night Football, Cowboys, Washington. Let's get into the games and let's kick things off.
By the way, it's still the NFC disgrace.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Sorry, yeah. I apologise for saying East. That is a disgusting oversight on my part.
Some would say a disgrace.
Yeah. Almost as disgraceful as the division itself. We have our first division champions of the year, though. Carolina Newton, as they might as well rename him because he is this team. Passed for 5 touchdowns, capped by a 15-yard scoring strike to Jericho Cottery with 105 to go as the Panthers preserved their unbeaten record with a 41-38 victory over the New Orleans Saints. A shootout in the Superdome. The Panthers are now the NFC South champions for a third time, a division which had never been won back-to-back before they did it last season. This was, it was a great shootout. It was an exciting game. But Cam Newton had a ridiculous game here. 15 consecutive passes at one point, 5 touchdowns for the second time in 3 weeks. Ted Ginn misses 2 wide-open deep bombs, 5 or 6 drops on the day, and he still manages to get it done. His naked bootleg touchdown was ridiculously good, as was his run on 4th and 1. His performance today was a thing of beauty.
He was so good. There was one worrying moment where he broke out to the right. It looked like he was just strolling in. And you could see his eyes, incredible camera work, where he didn't actually see the defender, I can't remember his name, defender smash him out of bounds. It was helmet-to-helmet contact. And I think he realised, I think he was a bit complacent then, and that really it made him buck his ideas up.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think he didn't keep his eyes downfield and didn't see that guy was coming. And he slowed up. He thought, I'm in the end zone here, I've beaten the corner,
yeah,
no problem. The linebacker came across and did smash him out of bounds. And he briefly went into the locker room, but it was maybe the briefest version of the concussion protocol I've ever seen. I think he was in and out of the locker room in about 25 seconds.
Yeah, it was
seconds.
Crazy.
But he came back in and had a ridiculous game. 9 teams in the history of the NFL have gone 12-0. 6 of those teams have gone on to the Super Bowl, and 4 of those teams have gone on to win it. So when you go 12-0, it's very close to... If the Panthers did it this year, it would be 50% of the time you win the Super Bowl.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it?
And
the Panthers and the teams that they've got left to play, none of them have a winning record, I believe. So that's amazing. And what we've seen, 16 straight regular season wins. It's the 5th longest in NFL history. I mean, that we're seeing something actually very, very special. At one point, a couple of points, more points, it looked like that would come to an end. That streak would come to an end. The Saints actually played really well. Delvin Bro, our boy, our bro, in fact, he played excellently. I think he won pretty good interception off of Cam, but they keep getting it done. I loved Jordan Todman's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Mike Tolbert.
Yeah, Mike Tolbert.
The human bowling ball, the caught human. A touchdown out of the backfield, did a full-on celebrate. What's his name?
It begins with C.
That's terrible. Cousin Carlton.
Carlton.
He Carltoned his way, and it was... the thing is, that's what I'm loving about this Panthers team, and I'm going to talk about this again later with the Chiefs, but the swagger to them.
Yeah.
They're having so much fun as they do it, and this is a game which they definitely could have lost. Like you said, the Saints, particularly on offense, look very good. On defense, they continue to be terrible. Brandon Brown are absolutely dreadful, gave up 3 penalties on the day, 2 touchdowns over him, and he had that huge sideline bust-up with Dennis Allen.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, they're trying to play down. I mean, it's about the 5th time we've seen a sideline bust-up.
Squared up to him.
In New Orleans this year.
Proper squared up to him. I think another player had to drag him away. It was disgraceful.
It was absolutely
ridiculous. It was the NFC East.
Stephen Roster tweeted us asking, if I was to take over coaching and game planning for the Saints defense this week, would they get any worse? I mean, I'd probably say they couldn't get any worse, Stephen, but I haven't seen your resume. So, you know, I don't know how good it would get, but I definitely would agree that it couldn't get any worse.
Are you worried about Ted Ginn? I mean, he's been plagued with this, Ted Ginn Jr. He's been plagued with this dropping issue throughout his career, and 2 honestly, wide open. Wide open. They would have been touchdowns. Probably would have stretched the Panthers away, and he didn't manage to get it done. I mean, that's the kind of thing that come the playoffs, he needs to be holding on. Maybe it's a good thing now, actually.
The thing is, he did catch the one long touchdown. And what I was stunned about is, even though he's not catching them, is that his over-the-top speed for a guy who has been in the league quite a few years now is still pretty incredible. Like, he hasn't slowed down. When he was in San Francisco, he was much more of a return man, didn't do much receiving, because they actually had some receivers there at that point. If he can still, they still have to target him because they still have to use that over the top speed to stretch defenses. If they don't do that, then defenses can stack the box more, get up against Jonathan Stewart. They need to have that threat. I think Greg Olsen offers it to an extent over the middle, but they haven't got an outside guy. Devin Funchess caught a really good touchdown in this game, and he's really started to come into his own in the last 4 or 5 weeks. And maybe he's the guy. So they can't take him off the field because what he offers is so different to what else is offered there. But the drops are a pain in the ass. And the other thing we had in this game, and Ollie, it's your chance.
Kick Watch
was the first ever 2-point return from a blocked PAT. Stephon Anthony returning it. There were 6 missed today, more than all of last season combined, 3 in the Chiefs game. I am loving the new PAT rules.
Yeah, I am as well. It's brilliant. It's making football more exciting, and that's what it was brought in to do. We don't often say it, but well done, the NFL. Are you worried about the Panthers giving up 38 points to the New Orleans Saints?
I'm not. I think these are the kind of games that come along once in a season. I still like that defense a lot. Obviously, we've got a lot of time. We've been talking about Josh Norman as being a shutdown corner and being one of the better players in the league this season. But outside of that, Coleman, the free safety, has been absolutely unbelievable. He's now got 6 interceptions on the season. I think that's just one back on the leader in the league. Yeah, the defense is still good. This was just looked like one of those divisional games, one of those shootouts. And I still maintain that if you look at the rest of their games, the Panthers are in a great position to go all the way 16-0. They remain undefeated, a team who haven't remained undefeated after the second loss in a row, doing exactly the same thing the Broncos did, doing exactly the same thing the Bengals did, is after losing their undefeated streak, losing back-to-back games, the New England Patriots. They slipped to the 3rd seed with this loss. That's how ridiculous this is. Brady's receivers are so bad, he has to catch passes himself.
That was actually a great play, though.
A 36-yard catch longer than Eric Decker, Dante Moncrief, Mike Wallace, all of their longest grabs this season, supposed deep threat guys. Elsewhere in the game, there were three returns in this game, a punt, a pick six, and a punt block. Najee Good scored on a block punt. Malcolm Jenkins returned to the interception, 99 yards for another touchdown, and the Eagles held on for an improbable 35-28 victory over the Patriots last night. Sproles returned a punt for 83 yards for the other return I mentioned for the Eagles' second special teams touchdown. Philadelphia at one point had a 21-point lead before the Patriots came charging back into this one. And off the back of this, we asked on Twitter if the Patriots are no longer the best team in the AFC, basically. They've lost back-to-back games. They've slipped to the 3rd seed. We asked, which of the 10-2 teams do you like the best? And who of the kind of wild card dark horse teams do you think could steal in and actually take the Super Bowl berth from the AFC? And we're going to pepper those through the show, people's responses. But Maine's tweeted us saying, is it possible right now that the Pats have slipped to being the 5th best team in the AFC? I think he means behind the Chiefs.
And the Steelers.
And the Steelers.
Yeah.
And it's possible that on a neutral field, all 4 of those teams would beat the Patriots right now.
Yeah, because the Eagles were a terrible football team until they came up against... I mean, they said it on NFL Network, and the colour commentators as well on the game said, look, they were embarrassed and they were playing with an extra intensity, with an extra pride, and they didn't want to be... That defence did not want to be embarrassed again. Despite Kike Alonso being burnt a couple of times by the likes of Amendola and James White, who had a great game actually as well, the Eagles really steamrolled the Pats, and the Pats didn't really have anything to go. Going back to your question, yeah, I mean, the Bengals look fantastic. The Broncos keep getting it done, doing it ugly. The Steelers look great, and the Chiefs look great as well.
Here is my suggestion. on Friday's podcast, which is going to feature the great Paolo Bandini in studio with us, sat right here in this very room.
I love Paolo.
Let's look at the AFC and NFC Championship race with four games to go. And I think we should do one of those predictor pick'em things where you pick all of your games and you see who you've got going the rest of the way. We'll talk through that on the next show.
I like that.
Good, because the AFC race...
I like that!
Because the AFC wildcard race is absolutely fascinating, as we'll keep talking about as the show goes on. The NFC, not so good. But really, the Pats, I thought they were going to turn it around. The Eagles got the stop. Then LaFell and Amendola both dropped passes on that final drive. LaFell responsible for one pick, where he literally just gave up on a deep route. And admittedly, it was a difficult throw for Brady. It was between the safety and the corner as he was heading for the end zone. But he gave up on the route and cut to the sideline. And Brady threw it just as he did that, overthrew him, and it was an easy pick in the end zone. I thought the throw for the 99-yard pick six looked like desperation from Brady. Yeah. It was third and goal. He tried to force it in between the safety and the linebacker.
Although I wanted to ask you about that. He was hit 13 times yesterday. He doesn't have Gronk. He's lost Edelman. He doesn't have Dion Lewis. Are we seeing that Tom Brady's...
He's human!
We see his body language as well. He's getting frustrated, isn't he?
He is. Tom Brady is a human being. Hysterical!
I reckon that deserved a longer hysterical, but fair enough.
Yeah, we're not going full.
We don't have the time.
Look, Gronk was hugely missed yesterday, and I know that's the elephant in the room as we've talked about it so far. And they're at Houston next week, and they're at the Jets in Week 16, and if Gronk isn't back on those two games, they're both potential losses. This team could slip to 12-4, and in fact, at 13-3, they're definitely, I think, not going to take the first or second seed.
Do you know what's incredible about that? They're going up against sack leader J.J. Watt without Gronk, and they're going up against that front seven of the Jets who have been lights out with their QB pressure. I fear for Tom Brady.
And I think what's amazing about all of that is that we talked about this on Facebook earlier, but Scott Chandler came into the game and had a couple of big plays. He had the touchdown. He had another big completion over the middle in the third quarter that kind of got a drive going, which looked like it was stalling. And he came in and looked half decent as a pass catcher, but what Gronk does is keeps defenses honest and stops them from being able to pile into the box and stop the run, and stops them from being able to bring blitz, because the pressure they brought, yes, they had some decent pressure with four man, but they blitzed a hell of a lot last night. I'd love to give you actual statistics, but I think a hell of a lot should be an official statistic.
Well, I like a hell of a lot. It's a great statistic.
I don't think you can do that if you've got to be double covering Gronk. You've got to also be thinking about a couple of other receivers on top of that. He keeps defenses honest, and that's where he was most missed, in his blocking and in the fact that he takes up those. You could almost have him out there and not have a single catch in the game. Target him just a couple of times and defenses will have to cover him.
Yeah.
And suddenly that makes it much more difficult for them.
What of the Eagles? What do you feel about them?
I feel they're still a terrible football team, but no, I've said it already. I like Chip Kelly. I think people will look at this game and talk about the fact that it's all on the special teams, on the defense, but they actually managed to get things going on offense. They did get things going on the defense. I thought they played really well overall, and it's unfair to accuse it of just being down to those special team plays. I think they deserve the win in Foxborough, and that's big for them. And of course, they could still win the NFC East because it's a disgrace.
Quite frankly, these two games were absolutely fantastic. I was watching it on Red Zone, and it was flicking between the two. You had the other two games as well. These two games are wonderful. I just loved it.
Yeah, right. Let's roll on, because as we said, we were going to not ramble, and we've gone on about these two games for ages. They were brilliant games, but there are some fantastic late games to still talk about. One of them happened in the Bay Area. Jeremy Maclin had two touchdown catches after fourth quarter interceptions, and Tyvon Branch returned a third interception from Derek Carr for a game-clinching score against his former team, and the Kansas City Chiefs rallied for their sixth straight win, 34-20, over the Oakland Raiders. But that lies slightly about the nature of this game, because the Chiefs, you look at the scoreline, you look at the fact this is on the road, it looks reasonably dominant. But this game came down to the fourth quarter. The Raiders were leading on three separate occasions prior to that. And it, for me, it all came down to, I mentioned the interceptions there, but the fact that Alex Smith, six straight wins now, no picks in over 300 pass attempts. The tightest game they've had, but when Oakland turned the ball over, that's when the Chiefs came into their own, and that's when they won this one. I really think that Alex Smith is a quarterback who could win a Super Bowl with this team.
Wow. Where's your hysterical music now? Jeepers, man.
That's probably the most deserved one we've had this year. Let's get hysterical. I want to get hysterical.
want to get hysterical. Let's get into hysterias.
Whichever team comes out of the AFC, whether they're facing the Panthers, whether they're facing the Seahawks, who are resurgent, I think is going to have, because they're going to have come through the AFC playoffs and had to have played Denver or Cincinnati or the Patriots or the Chiefs or the Steelers, you know, that is the best four or five teams in the league right now, other than the Panthers, feel like they're all coming out of the AFC. And if you come out of that and you go into the Super Bowl, then you've definitely, I would make you the favourites just based on strength of schedule alone. Alex Smith's won two big shootouts in the playoffs. Think back to New Orleans in 2012 for San Francisco, that Colts-Chiefs game in the first round. I am loving the Chiefs. I'm loving their attitude. Macklin was incredible. Kelce, when he got the two-point conversion, they're just rallying around it as a team. They're absolutely loving life. And the remaining schedule, Chargers at home, Baltimore on the road, Browns at home, Raiders at home. They're going to go undefeated the rest of the way. They're going to take a wild card spot. And watch out, the Chiefs are coming to a house near you in the playoffs.
We love the Chiefs here. We really do. I think as well, Derek Carr, he had this game in him. He had a game where he just blew up. It looked like he couldn't do anything. Two really bad interceptions out of three, really. There was a sack pick that saw Josh Muaga snatch the ball 66 yards. And it was a great bit of commentary from the guys who said when he hit about the 20-yard line, it looked like he had a piano on his back. He did. That's brilliant. Andre Holmes, who's an old man, caught up with him and brought him down. I think the Chiefs managed to score off that anyway. I think it was Spencer.
Spencer Ware's running touchdowns. Josh Marga had to be taking oxygen on the sideline.
ages afterwards.
He hasn't run 60 yards at pace in about 15 years.
And then Tyvon Branch, you mentioned the interception, but actually, if we break it down a little bit more, it was a diving, rolling catch. He popped up and was pretty much untouched to take it home from 38 yards. I mean, that was an amazing one as well. Yeah. I love what the Chiefs are doing, really do. Raiders, you're not a good football team.
But they look like a real football team again. That's the main thing. And they will go on. I think they're 5-7 now. They'll go on and challenge over the next couple of years. I like what the Raiders are doing, but they need to improve on defense and they need to stop giving the ball away. Moving on.
No.
Moving on.
Kick watch. Kick watch.
We don't.
Damn
it.
Three missed. Kick watch. Three missed kicks. Sebastian Janikowski. One from Cairo Santos, tout de bien, and another one from Cairo Santos, tout de bien. The first one wasn't his fault, it was a botched snap, but still, come on guys, you've got to get it together.
Yeah, that was bad. Alan M did tweet us on our question about AFC, and he says, as much as it pains me to say, KC are looking pretty hot at the minute and could well go anywhere and win.
Who doesn't like the Chiefs?
Alan M agreeing with me. Well, he might be like a Raiders fan or something. You never know.
Oh, okay.
The other game of the late games, this one we really don't need to talk about too much. Brock Osweiler threw for one touchdown and Danny Trevathan intercepted Philip Rivers and returned it 25 yards for the score as the Broncos won 17-3 against the hapless Chargers on Sunday night. Osweiler improved to 3-0 since taking over from the injured Peyton Manning, and the AFC West leading Broncos are 10-2 with the Chargers, falling to 3-9.
There was one really really depressing thing about this.
The reason I'm playing this, because the one really depressing thing is that we're probably never going to be able to play this music again. That's going to be the second to last home game in Qualcomm if they move at the end of this year. And then
Los
they'll no
Angeles
longer be
super char. Doesn't work.
The LA. Nope.
Los Angeles Chargers.
Right, fine, it works. We've established it still works.
I don't know. I only saw some highlights, so I can't really say whether the stadium didn't really. I didn't take notice of the stadium.
Oh, it was orange.
But when I saw Byron Chamberlain, friend of the show, his Instagram, the stadium was orange, and that's so depressing. San Diego, I'm sorry. I love the baby blue. Maybe London's team could play in baby blue. I'm not having it in San Diego anymore. You don't deserve the baby blue.
The only other thing to mention is the Broncos defense, absolutely dominant against this Chargers side, who obviously had a great game last week against the Jags on the road. And still, Philip Rivers is a Hall of Fame quality quarterback. Whether he'll go there based on the current records, we don't know, but he definitely has the stats and the overall quality to be a guy at that level. And they completely shut him down, and Von Miller looked brilliant again. Let's move on to late night football and a game as one-sided as it could possibly possibly be. And I wrote in my notes, Big Ben healthy is as good as Palmer, Brady or Cam. He's playing that well at the moment. If he'd been playing all year, he'd very much be in that MVP conversation we're having. He threw for 364 yards and four touchdowns as the Steelers overwhelmed the Indianapolis Colts 45-10 on Sunday Night Football. Antonio Brown caught eight passes for 118 yards and two scores and also returned a punt 71 yards for a touchdown with the greatest celebration we've maybe ever seen.
It was incredible. He jumped. I don't know why, how, or why, what's going on in his mind, but he jumped full pelt into the post.
He suggested afterwards that his plan was to kind of actually catch on to it and ride the post, essentially. And instead he just went into it nuts first. It's apt that this time of year, the Nutcracker Suite is popular in musical terms. Well, it was in the 1800s, but you know what I mean.
I loved the referee's description of why, because they have to describe everything. They said, unsportsmanlike conduct, using the post as a prop.
But he wasn't the only one. Martavis Bryant hauled in four passes for 114 yards for a score. D'Angelo Williams even added 134 yards.
He was wonderful.
And Pittsburgh shook off what was a reasonably slow start, gave away the early pick to dominate the Colts over the final three quarters. Roethlisberger, just to back up those stats, has 886 yards and 10 touchdowns in his last two starts against Indianapolis.
Of course, it was a 50 burger on them last year, wasn't it? Unbelievable.
They've gone over 500 yards in three of the last four games. The only game they didn't was the game that Landry, whatever his name, started.
Landry Jones, Jarvis, who knows?
And over the next 2 weeks, they face Denver and Cincy. And genuinely, if they play at the top of their game, I think they can beat both of those teams.
Have any of these been flexed? Because these are great games.
They are great games, and I don't know, but I'll research it while we discuss these games further. For the Colts, bad loss, but I think it was a game you were always going to lose. You're still in the AFC South because it's still not a very good division. But next weekend, you could have Clipboard Jesus starting. Unless Andrew Luck makes some miraculous comeback this week, it looks like Hasselbeck will be out next week.
The game caller is Al Michaels, Chris Collingsworth. By the way, we're going to say it every week. Outstanding.
Awesome.
They said Collingsworth, who's been speaking to Andrew Luck, said he doesn't know his timetable, but he thinks 3 weeks' time, so maybe back for week 16.
We got loads of tweets about the performance here. Tom Knight tweets, fancy the Steelers. Games against the Broncos and Bengals will show how good they are. Broncos also have a real chance, obviously, at the AFC, advancing to the Super Bowl from that conference. David tweets, I wouldn't want to be facing the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. The least Steelers-like team imaginable, and all the more thrilling for it, which I have to agree with. And somebody asked, Tom tweeted asking us, most exciting team in the NFL right now?
Least Steelers-like?
Yeah, I know, because if you look over their history, it's all about run game, banging defense. You know, all right, you had Lynn Swan and players like that, but this is not the Steel Curtain. This is not the Steelers team that went and won those two Super Bowls with Big Ben in the 2000s. This is an exciting, offensive passing team. And actually, what's amazing about Big Ben is that since his two Super Bowl wins, he's got better and better and better as a passer. He's just not had as good a team around him. Yeah. Now they're getting to the point where he might have that again.
I mean, what luck that Martavis Bryant and Antonio Brown are starting to peak in and around this year, maybe even next year. But I'd like to go to the Steelers' defense. They played really well yesterday. All right, it was up against the likes of Matt Hasselbeck and
Frank Gore, looking old.
But James Harrison looked pretty good. I really liked what he was doing yesterday. D'Angelo Williams in rushing, 130-something yards. He looked knackered by the end of it, but wow. So that they're retaining some sort of that Steelers identity. There was a few niggly defensive sort of unsportsmanlike penalties called as well. So that's coming back into their game. This Steelers team is looking really, really good. I'm not going to use the word that begins with N, with S, and ends with good. Sneaky good.
Super good?
Yeah,
sneaky. I don't think there's anything sneaky about it.
They're looking really good. Really loving watching them.
Tom asked, is there a more exciting team in the league right now? I say no. They're the team I most want to watch every week right now.
Yeah.
And particularly over the next 2 weeks with those big games, those are the games I'm most looking forward to. Ross did tweet us asking, is there a better receiving core in the league than Brown, Bryant, Wheaton?
No.
I think you have to add Heath Miller to that mix. And when you do that, you have to look at Cincinnati and you have to look at AJ Green. Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert. And
they've got Mohamed Sanu that can do it as
well. They've been unbelievably good. I don't think they're as good. I think the Steelers are the best. But there's some talk about them being in amongst that as well. And we'll get onto that game in a short while as we move to the early game. Still plenty to talk about. Let's take a quick break. So there's only one place to start with the early games, and it's a dominant win for an NFC West team on the road. No, I'm not talking about the 49ers win over the Bears. We will get to that in a little while, but I'm, of course, talking about Russell Wilson throwing for 3 touchdowns and rushing for another as the Seattle defense didn't allow a score, and the surging Seahawks won their 3rd straight game Sunday with a 38-7 romp over the Minnesota Vikings. Baldwin had 2 touchdowns and 94 yards receiving. Rules rushed for 101 yards and a score. And basically, the Seahawks did whatever the f*** they wanted.
And they did. I predicted this. I thought this would happen. But then that's me being a bit of an NFC home, Green Bay Packer homer, and not enjoying watching or seeing the Vikings do well. But Russell Wilson, and I know you want to wax lyrical about him in a second, but wow, he's looking good. It was just, you know, he's looking good when he's starting to get touchdowns with his legs. And that was his first one since week 16 of last season.
We talked about that stat last week where he only won his 2nd game in his time as a starter when the opposition team went over 25 points in his career. But he's gone over 30 points in 3 of the last 4 games, including, of course, the loss against the Cardinals. But they've been ridiculous on offense, and that's been the kind of bigger side of Seattle's game recently. Just to mention the Vikings quickly, because we'll get past that and we'll talk all about the Seahawks. They've been blown out twice in their own building against the best teams when they face them. Look, they're still an exciting young team, but I think they're lucky they're in the NFC. If they're in the AFC, I don't think they're a playoff team. Mm. Not based on the record, but based on the fact that they would have faced more AFC teams.
Yeah, and they're fallible. We've seen that they're fallible at the beginning of this season. Their defense looked pretty good. Deshaun Shedd came in and for his first NFL start, looked incredible. Frank Clark had looked pretty decent as well, 2 sacks. So when you can hold Adrian Peterson for 18 yards, that means that the Vikings cannot do anything. The offense looked fantastic. And I know that you wanted to talk about one particular play, one particular touchdown as well.
Let's just finish on that defense, first of all, because when the Seahawks defense have struggled, it's when teams have gone 4 wide, 5 wide sets, and they can't play their clever coverages, and you can pick on the second corner, whoever it's been on the other side. They, of course, cut Kerry Williams today. As we know, Cal asked us, maybe you're recording now, Kerry Williams just cut. Who have been the worst signings of this season? That's probably a conversation for Friday when we're here with Paolo, and I will put it to Paolo then. Make a note, Ollie. We need to ask that as a question on the next podcast, and we'll do it as a proper question, yes?
Andre Johnson.
Okay, done. We've got one. That's not how the Vikings can play. The Vikings were never going to be a team who could line up and spread the ball out. They stuffed the run, they got after Bridgewater, and if you're not going to spread them out and force them to play, the safeties to play deeper and force the corners to cover man, then you're not going to be able to beat the Seahawks. But I look at the other teams in the NFC, I look at the other teams in the playoffs. If the Packers actually build on the run, if the way the Cardinals play, I mean, the Cardinals are going to be an absolute nightmare for the Seahawks defense, the way they play offense, playing the way they are at the moment. Yes, talking about that play, and you mentioned the young players there. That's what's been so impressive for me. Tyler Lockett had a great game. You mentioned Frank Clark and his 2 sacks. You know, they didn't get Cliff Averill going at all because they didn't need to. Deshaun Shedd, I mentioned him last week, had another good game. All awesome. But Wilson, we gave him a lot of love last week, and deservedly so. But the 53-yard touchdown bomb to Doug Baldwin, which I named as my player of the week, it was just showed everything that's been great about his game recently. First of all, he stood strong in the pocket, which is something I think if he had faced that pressure weeks 1 through 6, he'd have tried to scramble. The option never would have been on. He stood strong in the pocket. He literally flicked the ball to make it go to Bolden. It was about 30 yards through the air. He high-pointed it. Yeah, it was almost as high as Rodgers' touchdown throw on Thursday night.
Yeah.
He just pinged it up with a flick of the wrist. Absolutely ridiculous over Anton Exum, spotting the weak link in the defense. And not only was it such a great throw, and was it under pressure, but it came after he just had a 53-yard touchdown run, pulled back for a penalty, and then had to, 48 yards, obviously, because of the 5 yards for the holding penalty. And he still went out and made that play on the next play. Russell Wilson is playing insane lights out football right now, and I hate to admit it, but the Seahawks are probably going to be in the NFC Championship game.
I don't know if you said this earlier, but 11 touchdowns and no picks in the last three games.
Wow. Adam Foxcroft, who's a regular contactor of the show, super fan Adam Foxcroft, tweeted, "Dear Deirdre, I'm looking for some advice here. Every morning I walk from my house to the station, and I mostly use the pavement, which is what it's for." Yes, correct. He's doing well so far. In fact, do you know what we need here? I've completely ruined this segment by not starting off with this. "Most mornings I have to jump out of the way of a cyclist who cycles the other way along the pavement."
Prick.
"It's the same person each time, and I recognise him partly because he wears a Seattle Seahawks beanie hat. What, if any, action should I take, and would it be different if, example, he was a fan of a different team? Footnote, a Titans fan would not behave this way."
Which one of us is Deirdre? I reckon it's you.
Look, it's the stunning beard. I don't want to tar all Seahawks fans with the same brush. This strikes me as much more of the kind of Raiders fan who wears a Raiders hat but isn't really a Raiders fan. Mm-hmm. Since 2012, and we even have a name for them, 12s since 12, the Seahawks have picked up a lot of fair-weather fans. So if you're not in that group and you support the Seahawks through the bad years, well done you. If not, and you cycle and you wear a Seahawks hat, you're probably a dick.
I would agree. I would say as well, though, Adam, and I'm not one for confrontation, so don't do anything. Honestly, you're the better person if you just let it lie. Hopefully that guy listens to our podcast. He probably won't because he's a new Seahawks fan. But if he does listen to the podcast, dude, stop cycling on the pavement the wrong way. It's not cool.
Bad news. Bad news. Right. Cincy dominating a bad Browns team. They began the day on reverse record and ended the same. The 10-2 Bengals and the 2-10 Browns. Andy Dalton threw two touchdown passes and ran for a score as they moved close to a playoff berth and the AFC North title. The Browns dropped their seventh straight. AJ Green is playing some of the best. Well, first of all, the Red Rifle. Runs to one, throws two. The Bengals' consistency and sticking with their coaching and sticking with what works and not blowing it up versus what the Browns seem to do every other year is showing massively with these two Ohio teams.
And by the way, we see that with the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. They could have got rid of Tomlin. Look what's happening with them.
AJ Green is playing some of his best football. Without Eifert, he looked phenomenal. Jeremy Hill has suddenly bounced back in the last 2 weeks. Anyone who owns Jeremy Hill in fantasy will know how frustrating he's been this season, particularly when you've gone and spent a first or high second round pick on him, like I did in pretty much every league. But they are playing on offense absolutely lights out football. And honestly, they're on their best form. We said this about the Steelers earlier, but they can beat anyone in the AFC on their best form. And much like the Steelers, they face the Broncos and the Steelers in the next few weeks. Fascinating games. Loving what Cincy are doing right now. You know, the AFC just gets better and better with every game we talk about.
And the fact that their offense is playing so well means that you don't really look, and especially going up against Austin Davis and the Browns, you don't really look at their defense. And I think Geno Atkins has been absolutely outstanding. He was putting pressure on Austin Davis pretty much every single play, getting through a couple of times. I'm loving what they're doing on defense. And this Bengals team look really, really good.
Hey, it's phenomenal. And what's amazing as well is they spent two high draft picks on offensive linemen, Cedric Ogbue and Jake Fisher, but still they had Andrew Whitworth, Andre Smith, who nearly caught a touchdown pass, which was a ridiculously good play. But they spent high picks on somebody like Marcus Hardison, and he's not even going to touch the lineup right now with DeMarta Pacheco, with Geno Atkins. I mean, we had a really good chat just last week with your boy, AJ Hawk, and the Bengals defense is fantastic and isn't getting the love it deserves. And I'm glad, Ollie, that you have been the man to give it some love.
Well, and a bit of love for AJ Green. 1,000 receiving yards for the fifth straight season. Only Randy Moss started a career with more than 1,000 yard seasons. And that was six. And I'm betting that AJ Green, barring injury, touch wood, that doesn't happen, gets six, probably gets seven. One of the best receivers in the NFL at the moment and probably will be and a Hall of Famer.
We signed that big 5-year deal. Last year was, of course, the year of the big name wideout signing big deals. And do you know what? One of the other things we talked about in the off season was the lack of big name wideouts winning the Super Bowl in recent seasons, teams going out and paying them and them not doing anything, he could be a guy.
Yeah, we could see it.
Buffalo killing the Texans streak. Tyrod Taylor threw a 40-yard touchdown pass to Charles Clay with 1:53 left to lead the Bills to a 30-21 win over the Texans on Sunday. Taylor finished 11 of 21 for 211 yards, but three touchdowns, and also scored an 8-yard rollout touchdown run. Buffalo 6-6 snapped their 2-game skid and gained on the Texans in the AFC playoff race. First of all, on Tyrod Taylor, against that Texans D, who have been so good the last four games, restricting teams to only 8.8 points a game before this week. He was superb. I mentioned the running touchdown. Him and Sammy Watkins in the first half just connected time. I mean, it was only, time after time. That would be all three of their connections. But it was a lovely throw on the touchdown and two beautiful deep balls. There was one out to the right-hand sideline, but the one over the center between that split the two safeties that set up his touchdown run was one of the best throws I've seen this season. Again, under pressure, much like the Russell Wilson play we talked about earlier. Tyrod Taylor, what a player they found there. The Bears must be kicking themselves.
Oh, which is wonderful.
and the schedule's very favourable for Buffalo. Theoretically, they could go 10-6 with what they've got for the rest of the season. But in the AFC, you might need 11 wins to get a wild card at this point.
Yeah, rate. Exactly, yeah.
For the Texans, they still had over 100 yards rushing. Chris Polk had his best all-round game in the NFL. DeAndre Hopkins still having a massive year. Hoyer still threw for three touchdowns. The Texans weren't bad, but they got outcoached and outclassed against the Bills. And that was something we've not seen the Bills do for a fair few weeks now.
Yeah, and keeping JJ Watt quiet was key for Buffalo, and they managed to do that. And I expect a backlash next week for JJ Watt, for the Texans. So, did you see DeAndre Hopkins' touchdown where he clearly pushed the guy off?
Yeah.
Caught the ball. I mean, again, the refs didn't have a great week all said and done, but to miss something like that was silly.
But then again, Odell Beckham, I think, clearly pushed off for his one-handed touchdown catch last week, and people weren't really willing to call him on it because it was such a great play, which seems silly to me.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Swings and roundabouts.
Mate. Let's move on to New York, New York. The city so nice, they gave them two football teams. That doesn't quite work so well, does it? Randy Bullock kicked a 31-yard field goal on the first possession of overtime to give the Jets a 23-20 win on Sunday after they were 10 points down with just a few minutes left of the game.
I love this game.
The Giants just can't close out games. They've now lost five games this season where they've led in the final 2 minutes. That's worse than the Seahawks, who keep losing games when they're ahead in the fourth quarter. In the final 2 minutes, the Giants are kind of like the new Jets.
Yeah, they really are. The Giants have only got two players. That's Eli Manning and Odell Beckham, and that's it.
He became the most prolific receiver in his first two seasons. A man you mentioned a moment ago, he has the most catches and yardage in his first two seasons since Randy Moss. The man is ludicrous.
Where would the Jets be, though, without Brandon Marshall?
Well, a tale of two receivers. Brandon Marshall is the Jets' offense. 12 catches, 131 yards, two touchdowns. Fitzpatrick has been great the last 2 weeks after the slump, but they're a team who very much could still make the playoffs. They're back into that playoff hunt now. We all want to say that the Chiefs and Steelers are definitely going there, but they have the Titans at home this week, at the Cowboys, then the Pats at home. We don't know what kind of Pats team is. Then at the Bills. I mean, they win three out of those four. They go 10-6. Suddenly, they look like they might nick one of those AFC wildcard berths, which we're so ready to give away to the Chiefs and Steelers.
If that's why this is so exciting, and it's just a shame that one of the playoff berths is going to come out of the NFC South, formerly the AFC South, sorry, formerly the AFC Disgrace. So,
and out of the NFC Disgrace. Both those divisions should have their playoff positions taken away from them and given to the Jets.
I know.
For the Giants-wise, they went from 4th-and-2 through a pick when a field goal would have been the difference to win it. They just totally killed themselves. Time management was dreadful again. You know, Tom Coughlin is meant to be a good coach and has made bad decisions consistently recently. He might finally go this season?
Yeah, I know. Will he? Won't he?
Probably
I mean, he's loved there. Really loved. Perhaps do a soccer thing and move him up to management or something, and bring someone in from elsewhere or whatever. But yeah, the Giants, they're not a good football team. And I was kind of pleased that they lost.
Moving on. Rolling. Rolling, the Cardinals keep rolling, because that's what I called this section on my thing. David Johnson, absolutely.
That was one of the worst things you've ever done.
David Johnson and Kerwin Williams in as the replacement back scored a touchdown apiece as the Cardinals stuffed the Rams 27-3 on Sunday. David Johnson was phenomenal. Brilliant in pass protection where, I mean, Chris Johnson, we talked about it a lot earlier in the season. He was brilliant, but He was brilliant because of scheme. He was brilliant because of a great run blocking line. He was never having to make too many cuts. He was never having to particularly accelerate out of his breaks. He just kind of had it all put to him on a plate. But they kept him in because he was so good in pass protection and because David Johnson had a few issues with that earlier in the year. He picked up blitzes on two or three occasions in this game that were phenomenal, got his 100 yards and the score. David Johnson looks like a guy who could carry the Cardinals running game for seasons to come.
How good was this Cardinals defense? Okay, they're going up against the Rams. Nick Foles, again, awful. But how good are they? I mean, they keep getting it done.
Yeah, I absolutely, we've said it plenty of times. I love the Cardinals. I love the fact that they keep getting the pressure. Tyrann Mathieu continues to play at an all-pro level. Absolutely love that. They've now won six in a row. And what they did this week was dominated against bad opposition, which they didn't do against the 49ers last week in a game which they probably should have dominated. But a couple of times this year that they've lost to team, I mean, like the loss to the Rams, where they've looked a little bit vulnerable. They appear to be closing that down. But on the other side of it, Fisher has to be sacked this year.
Oh, he's crap.
They have to win their last four in a row just for him to go for his standard 8-8s. Three in a row, three out of four to go 7-9. He started Foles this week. He couldn't wait to tell us he's going back to Case Keenum. He's ruining Todd Gurley for us, Ollie.
I know. That offensive line is shocking. You'd expect them to invest heavily draft-wise in offensive linemen in the next draft. Because,
and a quarterback, I imagine, as well.
Well, and a quarterback. There's so many things that Rams defense, that Rams team needs. They might even need a move away from St. Louis on this rate, because who will want to go and watch a Jeff Fisher Rams team next year?
They'll, of course, have an extra second round pick after the Sam Bradford trade, so they'll be able to go out and invest heavily. Something they've not done brilliantly with high picks they've picked up off trades in recent years, but the Rams get rid. The Cardinals, 10-2, keep rolling as the Falcons continue to collapse like a flan in a cupboard. 5-0 to start the season, 1-6 through the next seven games. They're now 6-6 on the air, and genuinely, looking at the rest of their schedule, if they went 6-10, it would not be that big of a surprise.
No, it really wouldn't.
We should talk about the game they played in, probably. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 23, Atlanta Falcons, 19. A late game, wonderful drive. Jameis Winston threw a 6-yard touchdown to Mike Evans with 1:39 remaining to give the Bucs a 23-19 victory. Did you see his post-game press conference?
I did not.
Funny stuff. He came out and he said, "We got into the huddle on that final play. I stood there and everyone looked knackered. The linemen were tired, the running backs, everyone." And I just went, "Who wants a touchdown?" And Mike went, me, I want the touchdown. So I threw it to Mike.
Incredible.
I thought that was brilliant. The number one overall pick in this year's draft scored on a 5-yard run and scrambled up the middle of the field, 20 yards on 3rd and 19 to prolong the third game winning drive of his career. Jameis Winston running for the first down on that winning drive, throwing the winning touchdown. He did throw one pick on the day, but he's handled the ball much better than we expected. They're a real playoff container at 6-6 in a much weaker NFC. Gurley is no longer nailed on for Rookie of the Year. This performance, combined with what happened down in Tennessee, makes me think that there are other players who might, or Jacksonville, I can't remember where that game was played now.
Actually. It was Tennessee. It was in Nashville.
Yeah, brilliant, perfect. Gurley no longer nailed on for Rookie of the Year. Another thing that Jeff Fisher has ruined for us, Winston, loved it. Doug Martin, excellent again. Yeah. Sims caught a couple of passes out of the backfield. Finally had Austin Seferin Jenkins back after a long time out. He looked good. I like this Tampa Bay team.
I like this Tampa Bay team as well.
I still hate the Lovie Smith is going to get plaudits for this. I think he's a terrible coach.
Will, they're 6-6. Their last four games is against the Saints, at the Rams, against the Bears, at the Panthers. They win three of those. They go to 9-7. They could make the playoffs.
I think they won't, because I think the Cardinals will win the West, and I think yourselves or the Vikings will split the North, and then the Vikings and the Seahawks will make the wild card positions. But The Bucks going 9-7 after how terrible they've been the last 4 or 5 years is pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
On the Falcons side, I mean, Julio Jones questioned the play calling in the red zone after the game. He had 8 catches, 93 yards. If you look at their remaining schedule, like I say, they could go 6-10. Matt Ryan, it wasn't all on him today.
Yeah, but he was crap again.
But he gave up some silly sacks. He gave up a silly pick again. It's disappointing.
Yeah.
Okay, irrelevant but fun games! Woo! These are three games that we just need to cover off very quickly. In fact, it's not three games anymore because we've talked about Miami-Baltimore as much as we need to. I can't believe that we're going to finish the podcast on the game we're going to finish it on, but we should absolutely 100% talk about the shootout that we deserved on Thursday Night Football for staying up late to watch it. We didn't get it. What we did get was a ridiculous game in Nashville. Marcus Mariota scoring the go-ahead touchdown on an 87-yard run midway through a crazy fourth quarter. And the Titans edged the Jags 42-39 on Sunday to snap their 11-game home losing streak. And you know what was particularly ridiculous about that?
No.
If you take Mariota's run out of this game, he had a phenomenal game. And we have people, Jamie Cuttridge of this, occasionally of this parish, tweeted, what size should his Hall of Fame jacket be? He wasn't the best quarterback in this game.
No.
Blake Bortles threw for 5 touchdowns and was really quite unlucky to be on the bad side. But Mariota, 112 yards on the ground, the difference. Bortles on track for 4,300 yards this year. Ridiculously good for a guy playing in the team he's playing for. But bad defenses. Jags run D has been brilliant the last few weeks. Last 4 weeks, I think they've been top 5 in the league. But they need help at pass rush. They need help at linebacker. They need help in the secondary. They should basically just draft all, maybe all defensive players and one offensive lineman. That's what they should draft.
Well, they don't need anything on offense. They've got a decent, more than decent quarterback. TJ Yeldon will see much more from him next year. You've got two Allens at wide receiver. Julius Thomas at tight end. So, do you give Gus Bradley another year to get the defense right?
Yes.
Yeah.
One more year. And then the Titans, I mean, we can't not give them love. 42 points. Mariota did look brilliant. That touchdown run was fantastic. And once he's got better weapons around him, he's got a half decent offensive line who aren't playing up to it. But actually, he's got some interesting pieces on that line. A couple of young players there. They could prove to be a decent team.
What I really loved about that run, by the way, the third longest run by a QB since 1970, Terrell Pryor and Colin Kaepernick, 2013-14, respectively, were slightly longer. But what I loved about that run was the way the field opened up. He saw that it opened up. There was a moment where you thought, slide. But no, he broke inside. Justin Hunter was chasing him, and Justin Hunter saw that there was going to be someone to catch him, put in a brilliant block. Mariota went in. I absolutely loved that touchdown.
Yeah, great stuff. And finally, the beer bet is on. A Gabbert Gasm in Chicago. 44-yard run to level the game. 71-yard touchdown. He is killing it! That 71-yard touchdown to Torrey Smith in overtime after running for the tying touchdown late in regulation lifted the struggling 49ers to a 26-20 victory and a 4-8 record over the Chicago Bears, who have slipped to 5-7. They went 3-out, forcing a punt by San Francisco to start the overtime. And the man of the moment, really, for the 49ers was Robbie Gould.
Yeah, that 36-yard miss. Unbelievable to win the game.
But he'd missed a touchdown earlier in the second half. I think it might have been the third quarter. But he'd missed a chip shot field goal earlier. Then he had to set up for that one. He's one of the most reliable kickers in the league. Misses his second kick of the game. And what was brilliant is that Dixon tweeted me after Blaine Gabbert ran for his 44 yards. I tweeted from my personal Twitter account, not from Gridiron. You won't hear such language on Gridiron. Blaine f***ing Gabbert in big capital letters. Then immediately afterwards, they returned that kickoff for 71 odd yards to put themselves into field goal range. With the score tied at 20 apiece, and he tweeted me back going, your Gabbert-gasm didn't last very long. I favorited it, I waited on it, and then I quote tweeted it 20 minutes later when he threw the 71-yard touchdown run. I won at being a smug twat on Twitter.
I loved every single part of that victory. I called it, I knew they would win, I love that they won. Absolutely glorious.
Cutler, we gave him a lot of praise for under Adam Gase, and but he's come back down to earth. Last three games, just the one touchdown throw. Admittedly, the running game has been good, but a horrible pick six in this game early on, which really, when the Bears were shutting down the 49ers on offense, Blaine Gabbert didn't start the game as strongly. But genuinely, I'm ready to believe Blaine Gabbert, first of all, and this is a stat we picked, I stole completely from around the NFL to give them the praise on this one. He's had four of the five fastest quarterback runs through the last four games. He is a guy, that's a very underrated part of his game. And I think with the Jeep creased, roll out bootleg style offense, he's a guy who I have no issue with us rolling out next season whilst we rebuild. Pick up a quarterback in the draft, let him learn from Blaine Gabbert. But you know what I mean. Let him learn. Let him adapt and develop in the NFL. Someone like a Jared Goff, who's only really had one great season this year, but has been developing through his whole time in college. Pick up somebody like that. Give them a year or two to sit. Build slowly and rebuild this into a great team again. Chris, in fact, tweeted, I refer to you to my hysterical Steve Young, Blaine Gabbert tweet from about 2 weeks ago, which really, that comparison does more than anything else we've had on this show. I'm not saying he's Steve Young, but if you look at Steve Young's numbers when he left Tampa, 3-16, 11 touchdowns, 21 interceptions, just a 55% completion rate. They're a comparable age. Gabbert could be an example of like a Tyrod Taylor style. He should have been sat and should have been allowed to learn. Instead, he was thrown in at the deep end, didn't do a very good job, but now he's had some time. He's developing into a real NFL quarterback. I'm getting hysterical about this, but I love Blaine Gabbert.
To continue the love, he said to the colour commentators, this is the best physically he's ever felt. And you're seeing it with that touchdown run. You're seeing it with the big arm. It's getting exciting. I'm sorry, guys.
We have talked way too much about the 49ers-Bears game when I said these games were going to be the irrelevant and fun quick ones we go through. And you can tell that I haven't had water in the studio with me today because the mistakes pile up as the podcast goes on and I stop being able to speak properly. My mouth's very sticky. Just not producing any saliva anymore, Ollie.
Oh, no.
Do you know what would make me salivate?
No.
The idea of next week's podcast.
Oh.
Because it's going to be a stonker. We've got Paolo Bandini joining us in the studio. We're going to talk about who we predict is going to be in that AFC and NFC wildcard positions. We're going to make our final predictions 4 weeks before the end of the season, lock them in, make some beer bets on them, preview all the weekend's games. And there are some absolute stunners this weekend. So we're getting into the studio, I think, at midday on Friday?
Yes, please, yeah.
And we will be doing our very best to get a big interview for that as well. We did get a lovely tweet from wrongshapefootballs.com saying, wow, the big interviews.
Did you not read the tweet?
Yeah,
is it not right in front of you?
saying, no, it's not right in front of me. I'm just remembering it right now. Saying, like, wow, the big interviews keep rolling. If you did miss out on our interview from last week with Jerry Glanville, former defensive coordinator and head coach of the Falcons and Houston Oilers, that was a great interview talking about Warren Moon, talked about Brett Favre. Really, really good fun. Well worth going back and listening to that. And on Thursday night football this week, it's Vikings at the Cardinals. That is a great game.
Yeah, especially with how bad the Vikings were this week. They can't be this bad again, or that bad again this week, or on Thursday. Thankfully, there's no Colour Rush uniforms. We can get hashtag Kitwatch.
Yes, the Vikings were terrible this week, Ollie, but I think they continue to be terrible. I think the Cardinals win this one at home, go to 10-3, open it up for you with the Cowboys coming into your building on Sunday night to take sole possession of first place in the NFC North. There are some great games elsewhere as well. Steelers at Bengals in the early games.
Yes.
Patriots at Texans in the late game. We've got so much to preview, so that'll be coming up later this week. Go to gridiron-magazine.com to take part in our predictor game. You can win a New Era hat if you win the weekly game, and there will be an overall season prize which we'll be announcing very, very soon. At Gridiron on Twitter to follow us there. Go to iTunes, give us a rating. That would be lovely. We love you for doing it. Ollie, is there anything you'd like to add to this malaise?
Do you know what? I think we've run long. I won't tell people about my dad wrote a porno podcast, which is fantastic.
go out and get my dad wrote a porno as a podcast. It sounds, I didn't know that the word podcast was going to come on the end of that. I really thought the story was going to be that Mr. Hunter had written himself a porn.
No, no, thank God he hasn't. It would be awful. This is so funny, Will. You must listen to it. I know you're always looking for things to listen to. You must.
Absolutely, 100%. So thank you so much for listening to us at Gridiron on Twitter, like we say. We love that you tune in. We love that you interact with us on Twitter. We've got a Facebook as well, Gridiron Magazine. There's gridironpod@gmail.com. You can email us there as well with your Dear Deirdre questions. Ollie Hunter, anything you'd finally like to add?
Nope.
Wonderful. This has been The Gridiron Show.
In association with Sports Travel Tours.